Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on.
Today on the 10 Adventures podcast, we're doing something a little bit different. We're going to bring part of our team in on the podcast and we're going to talk about our favorite trips ever. After going through the pandemic, a lot of us have been stuck here in Canada and dreaming about great trips we've done in the past. And so what better way to excite other people than to share our favorite trips? With me is Karen, recently back from a cycle touring trip in Europe. Hi, Karen.
Oh, hey, and back on Vancouver Island just in time to witness the epic flooding that British Columbia has had. But it's sunny today, Richard.
Well, that's nice. Hey, we had our first snow, so I was out shoveling the sidewalk before the kids went to school.
Sounds fun.
So with us today, we've got Kelsey, Sarah, Minz, Mallory, Nadine, and Adam. And why don't we start just by getting to know each of them a little bit? And so why don't we go from last to first? Adam, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about what you do here at 10 Adventures.
Well, hi. I am the mobile developer for 10 Adventures. So I'm building the iOS and Android apps to make it so that people can use our app while hiking in the wilderness and they need trail guides or they need advice. And they can use our app to find tours all around the world that they want to jump on.
Yeah, if you haven't checked out our mobile apps, we've soft launched the iOS app. It's really cool. The Android app's going to come in 2022, but this will be a great way for everyone next summer and spring to really start exploring and take our route guides with them while they're out in nature. Next, we have Nadine, which probably some of the listeners may have already met.
Yeah, hi, my name's Nadine. I am one of the adventure travel specialists at 10 Adventures, and I also do some content writing as well. So my primary role right now is working with all of our adventurous guests to help plan their epic trips, especially as the pandemic winds down. We're just seeing a real growth in guests looking to travel to some of the most beautiful places on Earth, and we're helping them do that.
That sounds super fun, Nadine. You must get to hear a lot of great stories from people.
I certainly do. Yeah, that's a big part of it. And also just being a part of that sort of initial build up to the trip, I find myself often getting very excited as I learn about the destinations that our guests are traveling to. And then, of course, hearing their feedback when they get back is also extremely rewarding. So I get to live travel in this role, which is really cool.
Very, very cool. How about you, Minz?
Hey everyone, I'm Minz. I work in digital marketing at 10 Adventures. Been loving it so far, and my goal is to try and get 10 Adventures content, both routes and tours and whatever comes on next as well, in front of more and more people so more users can find us and just share what we do with bigger audience.
Great work. Now Mallory, you're up next.
Hello, everyone. My name is Mallory. I am a content writer and editor with 10 Adventures, and I've been doing that for about a year and a half now, best year and a half ever. But I write adventure travel tour itineraries and hiking route guides, as well as destination guides and blog posts. So lots of different things, but it's just so exciting being able to share cool places around the world with everyone. I always like the idea that maybe someday somewhere someone's reading an itinerary that I wrote and they decide to take that tour. So yeah, best team to be a part of for sure.
I think I've read some of those tour itineraries lately because I love to just go over them over and over again.
Oh, I give myself FOMO all the time.
I bet.
And so last we have Sarah and Kelsey sharing a microphone. One thing that's kind of neat about 10 Adventures is we have two husband and wife teams. We have Kelsey and Sarah who are, you know, really good friends. And so it's, you know, a real kind of like a family. Lots of people who just kind of, you know, kind of know each other and, you know, are working together. Kelsey and Sarah, why don't you two introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm the social media coordinator at 10 Adventures. So if you see me hyping up your posts or constantly on all of the social channels, that's me. And say hi because I love to chat with you.
And hi, I'm Kelsey. I do the same thing as Mallory. So I do write content and edit content for 10 Adventures. So again, if you see some roots, I've probably written them or edited them, and I hope you're enjoying them.
So we're here today to talk about the best trips we've ever had. You know, one of my favorite discussion points, you know, you're out for a coffee or a beer and someone comes back and they just share like this incredible trip they've been on. And, you know, as Mallory said, you have this fear, you know, fear of missing out. You just like all of a sudden want to go there. And, you know, it could be a place you've never thought of. You're like, man, I want to go to North Macedonia all of a sudden because, you know, somebody's telling you this great, you know, adventure they just had. So I thought, why don't we go through and hear from everyone's best adventure? Why don't we start with you, Adam? You know, what's your favorite adventure you've ever been on, your favorite trip you've ever been on?
My favorite adventure was doing the West Coast Trail, which actually was coming on 10 years ago. So like it obviously blew my socks off quite a bit. It took us 8 days, which is a bit longer than normal. We really sort of took our time in the center there. And yeah, it was a very great hike for sort of technique. There was a lot going on. There's lots of ladders. There's lots of ropes. There's a couple containers strapped onto a cable cars that go shooting across a river. Yeah, it was a really excellent hike.
I did that hike a few months ago. I did it in June, and I started on the first day that it opened after the pandemic. And I don't think I had as exciting a time as you did because it was so slippery. You wouldn't believe it. But so many people love that hike.
Yeah, they're a significant chunk of the trail gets, I imagine, like washed out every winter and stuff, like lots of lashed together boardwalk that seems to be ready to fall apart at any moment. Great, great hike.
What was your favorite part of that hike?
Oh, goodness. I think it would have been the second day. There's a couple different routes you can take if you're coming from the southern end. One's in the trees, one's on the beach. We took the beach route, which required sort of the first half going over all these like massive, massive boulders. Like there isn't really a ground per se so much as just working your way in between boulders. The second half of that day is on sandstone on the beach, which I had never really been on before. And it turns out is just like the perfect highway for hiking. Like it's not slippery. It's got grip. You know, you might be in like a half inch of water, but that doesn't really matter if you've got good boots. And you can move really, really fast compared to, say, the slippery forest that we were just talking about or the bouldering that I'd been doing earlier that day. We did that for several more days, like several other sandstone days, but that was my first time ever experiencing it. So it was really, really great, really versatile. And I really felt like we were finally moving after the first day, which we covered, I think, 6 kilometers in 7 hours because it was horrible.
Adam, so the West Coast Trail is along the west coast of Vancouver Island in British Columbia. It's famous for, you know, big waves, you know, kind of there's nothing between Vancouver Island and basically Japan or, you know, the east coast of Asia. It gets some pretty extreme weather. Did you guys have to deal with any extreme weather on your trip?
Just to set the record, you actually, when you're on the West Coast Trail, you pass the point at which you're no longer protected by the American continent. And there's actually like a big white triangle, like metal triangle set up to mark the spot. And there is apparently a sister triangle set up on the very point in America. So that's sort of like, now you've passed into the open ocean. So that's on like the third day. So on like the first and second day, you are very protected and we didn't really experience anything but fog and then sort of the heat of the day. But then after that, you're absolutely right. Storms sort of come up much faster than you'd expect. It's more, well, it was the summer, mind you, but it was more wind than rain. So just lash your tent down, make sure you don't leave stuff lying around because it could just fly off if you're not careful.
So Adam, you know, thinking back as a decade ago, I find with myself, I have like these memories of trips I did. And there's this one powerful memory when somebody says, what about that trip? It comes to me. Do you have that for the West Coast Trail? Like what is the powerful memory that makes it such a great trip for you?
Yeah, I think on maybe the third or fourth day, you have to cross this big canyon And I imagine it was just really expensive to, there is a suspension bridge in part of this, but I imagine it was really expensive to put in. And so to make it a little more economical, you go down two really big wooden ladders, and then you cross the bridge, and then you go up two really big wooden ladders. I imagine just to shorten the span, they had us climb down first. You're really high up, even on that bridge, let alone the ladders. And I'm going to say they're really well-kept ladders, but you're not lashed in or anything. So, you know, don't look down. and it, you know, I'm not trying to make it out as more scary than it actually was. It was quite safe, but it was really fun and exhilarating. And that's what makes it quite memorable. Aside from that, there's one day where you have to walk like 22-ish kilometers because there's no water sources to stop at in between, so it's, you have to do it. And the day after that, we walked 3 kilometers and then just set up on a beach for the whole day, which was quite relaxing. And that definitely sticks out as well.
That's always a great thing to do. Light a fire, sit on the beach in the sun when it's warm, and, you know, just relax and enjoy yourself. That's what makes getting out there so much fun. So we're going to move on to someone else's best trip that they can remember. Mallory, do you want to go next?
Sure, I would love to. I was thinking about this and I realized that it is so tempting to just say the furthest place you've gone or the place that you've visited that's most unlike where you're from. But I really think the best adventure I've had was very recently, and it was a bit closer to home in Arizona, which is actually a place I've been to more times than I can count. That's the perk of growing up with snowbird parents. But this one trip, I decided that I was going to do everything and see everything in Arizona that I had always wanted to see. And so I figured an epic road trip was the way to go. And I was going to bring my partner with me as well, just to show everything to him too. So we decided to do the Grand Canyon, Horseshoe Bend, Antelope Canyon, and Sedona. So our epic road trip of Arizona this past year, I think, was my favorite adventure I've had.
So how long were you doing that for?
We did it all in, I think, 4 or 5 days. We started in Lake Havasu City and we drove up to Page and saw Horseshoe Bend and the Grand Canyon. And then we stopped in at Antelope Canyon and then we spent a couple of days in Sedona. So it was a lot of driving and it was a pretty condensed trip, but every single moment was just better than I thought it would be, for sure.
Yeah, those are all places that you see so many pictures of everywhere you look. And I thought that some of those spots like Antelope Canyon or Horseshoe Bend, I thought they were hard to get access to at times.
Well, some of them are, but what you say about you see so many pictures, that's exactly the whole theme of the trip for us, was that everything we saw was so much more incredible in real life. And sometimes you're not sure. I'd seen Antelope Canyon actually on the cover of an Arizona Highways magazine 10 years ago. I was like, that looks incredible. I need to see that someday. And we were driving up to it, and you have to take a guided tour to see it. So we're sitting in the Jeep and we're driving up to it. And I remember being a little bit worried that it wouldn't measure up in real life, because, you know, the pictures you see, they're edited and they're filtered and the colors are perfect. But we walked into the canyon and I immediately burst into tears and I cried as I walked through, because it was just so much better in real life. And then same thing with my partner. I'd been to the Grand Canyon once before, but we walk up to the South Rim and we look over and I'm like, okay, here it is. What do you think? And he just goes, oh my God, it's huge. And I'm like, yeah, they call it the Grand Canyon. That's the whole point. And he's like, no, like I thought it would be big, but like, I can't wrap my brain around how incredible it is. And we had the same reaction at Horseshoe Bend, which is actually pretty easy to get to, but I stood and looked down into it. And I was like, this is orders of magnitude more impressive in real life than in any picture I've ever seen. So thankfully, everything we saw during that trip actually ended up being just overwhelmingly more impressive in person than any photograph I'd ever looked at. So that was pretty special for sure.
You know, I'm so jealous, Mallory, because that was literally the exact same trip I had booked here in November that I had to cancel. And I've never been to the Grand Canyon. I've never been to Horseshoe Bend. I've never been to Sedona. And, you know, it's one of those things where I had these ideas and I was actually prepared. I'm like, it's going to be worse because, you know, a lot of places you go to and you realize, oh, there's like 8,000 people here and it's not as good. But then I was reading before, like it wasn't as busy as normal because with all the travel restrictions, I'm super happy you had this great experience. And it just kind of reaffirms in me, I've got to get down there. And I was going to take my kids and I could just imagine little kids seeing this and just how wonderful it was. It's really heartening to hear that, you know, it was so exceptional. Now, I had a question about Sedona. Is Sedona a place where you go there just to relax and mellow out? Or is it a place where there's lots of great hiking around there?
It is definitely both. Sedona, I think, being there for the first time, I feel like having grown up in the Rockies, it must be similar to what people who visit Banff for the first time experience. The town is small. It's pretty busy. There's lots of traffic. But if you just look up all around you, it is so beautiful. These dramatic red sandstone formations just surround the city. And so Sedona itself is very unique. It's quirky, you know, all of the vortexes and the energy readings and the psychic stuff, like that's kind of the fun, quirky part of Sedona. So there's all of that, but there's also really excellent food. If you could eat Mexican food all day, like I can, you'll be very, very happy there. But then the landscape that surrounds it is truly one of a kind. There's nowhere else in the world quite like Sedona. And so while a lot of the hiking is a little bit easier than what you would get near the Rockies, the scenery is just completely different and the viewpoints are not that hard to reach. So I think you're saying you want to go with your kids. It's kind of a perfect place for that because you can get really exceptional views without having to work too hard. But then the stuff that's in town as well is definitely worth doing.
Richard, it sounds like you definitely need to go there with your family.
2022.
Yep.
Autumn, here we go.
Get it planned. Get it planned. How about you, Kelsey? What do you think was your best trip that you've done?
So in 2019, February to 2020 in January, my partner, or I guess you could say fiance now, I didn't have to point that out, but I guess I just did. we went to East Africa. So we did Malawi, Tanzania, and Kenya. So we started in Kenya for 3 months and we liked the like slow travel kind of thing. So we stayed in one spot for 3 months and just explored all the local spots nearby and then got to know like a couple of friends there who we still keep in contact with from time to time. And then we went to Tanzania for 3 months and we kind of did more hopping around there, maybe a month-ish in three different spots. And then we ended in Zanzibar for maybe like 5 days. That was more like to explore and stuff. And not really slow travel.
Did I hear you correctly? 3 months in Tanzania?
Mm-hmm. 3 months Kenya, 3 months Tanzania, and then I think 6 months in Malawi.
Oh, wow. So how did you do that? So were you just like renting an apartment for a month in one place or splitting it up between different locations?
So there's something called workaway.com. So we did like so in the first place, actually we got this through a contact that Cam's, that's the fiance, his family knew. And so then we got that contact who started a school out there with one of the locals. And so then we went there and they needed help with like sponsors and computer work and stuff since everyone's like so busy teaching and running the school. So they just needed like some people to come in and do the computer work. So then we did that for 3 months at that school, and that school was so cool because we got to go on evening walks and stuff. And then one time we saw a giraffe just in the wild running, and then we saw zebras and stuff. So that was just cool, just like running in the backyard of where we were staying. And then we'd play soccer every night with the teachers and then some of the kids. One grade five kid schooled me every time, and it was so annoying.
So your experience, it wasn't just like seeing Africa and going on safari, you were actually living there and working, volunteering.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was fun. Yeah. And then, so the next place in Tanzania, we kind of did more like digital nomad kind of stuff. We were tutoring kids in China online, but tutoring them in English. And so that was one of the things. So then we kind of just more hopped through Airbnbs when we were in Tanzania, which was awesome. And we ended up connecting with a really cool family in a place called Morogoro, where you kind of go and then there's just mountains everywhere. It reminded me of Banff a little bit, but we kind of just chose our own adventures. Like you could find all these little paths going places, and that was really fun. And then we became friends with a local who made alcohol out of coconut. And so then she would talk to us in her language, and then we would talk to her in ours. And that was so much fun, just like trying to figure out what we were saying.
I bet you could have understood more than you would have thought when you were talking. Because sometimes when I'm traveling, I notice that so much of communication is body language and gestures and facial expressions that actually I'm always surprised at how much you can communicate, even if you're not speaking the same language.
It's so true. Yeah, that's true. It was a lot of laughing and cheersing and like, I heart you things. It was fun. Yeah. So we like doing that kind of stuff, just like going to one spot and then like venturing out and exploring and just meeting whoever and getting to know like what people do in their daily lives. We love that kind of travel. And I can't wait to do it again.
Sounds fun. So was there one moment that you would say like is fixed in your mind as a memory?
I think in Kenya, so the head teacher at the school invited us to go see her place in this really green area that grows avocados, bananas, mangoes, like any fruit, any vegetable you can think of. And so we went there and then we just brought our tent and camped outside of her place. And then it was so cool just being there, and then her neighbors and friends would just like come into her backyard, then we chat with them, then they leave, and then another group would come in, we chat with them, and then she brought us to like each of her friends' houses. And I think we had 11 cups of tea in one day, and I still remember she was like, tea time is every time. We're like, okay. It was so fun. So that place is tied with Paris. Saying Paris sounds very basic white girl, but tied with my favorite place in the whole world. It was so beautiful, and I really want to go back. I would go back to Kenya just to go back to that place and the school, those two places together. It was awesome.
But it sounds like your interaction with people who are living there was like the highlight of that experience.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, so many cool connections. And then also meeting other travelers, too, was a lot of fun. I just love that with traveling. Like, you don't know who you're going to meet. Like, you could go on a walk one day and then all of a sudden you meet one person who leads you to another person, and then soon enough you're traveling to a certain place together. Like, I love that about traveling.
I feel like I want to ask like 100 more questions because we haven't even talked about Malawi, where you spent 6 months, which is a really cool kind of less visited place, but we've got to keep moving on. So why don't we talk to Minns now? And Minns, why don't you share your favorite trip?
My favorite trip is definitely the West and Midwest US road trip. I believe that we've done, my wife and I have done in 2017, if I'm not mistaken, but time flies by very fast. So I was just even looking at some files, just try and remember when it was made. It was just a couple of months out of our 7 or 8 month trip around, well, what we expected to be the world, like became a bit smaller. And we started in Seattle in Washington State, and then we went east from there, up to Montana, then down, I believe, to Colorado, Utah, Arizona, and then Nevada, California. There was a storm in the Pacific. We had to go back to like a safer place, more inland. Really even looked at the map and the places we've been. And I don't even remember why we've made some decisions and how we ended up in some of those places. And then eventually we went up near the Pacific on, I believe, Highway 1. To Oregon, and then back to Seattle, where we flew from to Nicaragua to continue our trip. So that was definitely the best thing we've ever done.
And so, Minns, was this one of these kind of classic trips where you're exploring like all these great national parks and national forests, you know, around the U.S.? Was that kind of like seeing all these like incredible places that you can't believe were all kind of in one country?
Yes, that definitely was. Coming from Europe, there's a lot of nature. There's really not a lot of wilderness, except for a couple of countries, probably. And we really wanted to be closer to nature, see some wildlife life, not through the television or YouTube or anything. And it was really special. I believe we visited more than 20, maybe 22 or 25 parks, national parks, wilderness areas, and other regions that are all sort of surrounded by nature. And we were also, what we loved about it is we literally were camping probably 99% of the time. So we were staying mostly in the parks itself. And when we had to get some amenities like showers or Wi-Fi or something like that, we would find a private campground most of the time, which had all the amenities we needed and stay closer to towns, but still not going too far from any of the parks that we wanted to visit. So we were literally in the parks. We spent a few nights in Airbnbs and some weird places and met some really cool people, but it was mostly just camping, which was awesome.
And so the question I always hear people talking, and there's a big aspect of people saying, this is the best national park. And like some people are really like...
opinionated?
Really opinionated. You'd never think humans are like this. But most people have never only visited a few. So like they always like the one that's closest to them or one of the two or three they've been to. You've been to 25 of them. Are there any that stand out? They don't have to be the best, but any that you think, oh man, that was really special. I have to get back there at some point. And I think I know at least one of them you're going to say, which is Glacier in Montana.
Yeah, that was definitely the one. I went through all of them and just looked at some of the images and everything. And I was thinking, you know, which one stands out most? And Glacier definitely is kind of the winner. You know, if getting back to your question, you asked somebody else, is what you remember, like one biggest thing there. And I believe Glacier would be that place, especially the Many Glacier area that I know you've been to as well and you love. And I think it was the first time we actually realized how close to nature and wilderness we are, because we were going on Grinnell Glacier hike, which is unbelievable. And we've met like a moose with a calf in the lake, really just like 20 meters from us or something. And there was a lot of grizzly scat all around. And we were like, this is as good as it gets. And we've done the hike. It was spectacular. And then I believe probably the same afternoon when we came back from the hike, there were some people looking through binoculars at a mountain which is really sort of near the campground, the Many Glacier campground, and they spotted a grizzly with two cubs. So they allowed us to have a look through those binoculars, and it was just spectacular. It was really but there's definitely more than that, and that's what is really great about that trip, that every state and even parts of state are so vastly different from one another. Glacier is all really similar to like Waterton Lakes National Park and the Rockies in general. Obviously, it's in the same mountain range, but it's just, you know, green and snow-capped mountains and lakes and beautiful rivers. And then you go like south and there's canyons and red sandstone and then Canyonlands National Park. It's where, you know, my jaw just dropped to just see, you know, how special it is, like the canyons and what nature can do, like what a river can do to like stone and stuff. And yeah, that was really, there are some parks, but Glacier still stands out.
And I think that's like a bucket list trip for everybody. I keep planning every year, how can I go down and visit a bunch of the parks kind of on the Front Ranges or down to Utah? I have to talk to you and figure out where to go, because that just sounds incredible. Let's move on and hear from Nadine. So Nadine, tell us about your, you know, favorite trip.
Yeah, so similar to Adam, the trip I initially thought of was one that I've done over 10 years ago as well. But I kept thinking, okay, I've done a lot of travel since then, but like, has anything really topped that? And the answer was no. So this trip was many, many moons ago, but it's still my favorite till today. It's a 3-week overland camping trip that I did through Southern Africa. So I did it as part of a group tour. And we started in Victoria Falls in Zambia, and we went down through Botswana, went through some incredible national parks like Chobe and Etosha, explored the Okavango Delta by a dugout canoe, and then really witnessed the landscape change as we continued south in the truck through Namibia and coastal Namibia, the Namib Desert. You have like the peaks of Spitzkoppe and the sand dunes, and we sandboarded, and it was just amazing. So continued all the way down through Namibia, and our final destination was Cape Town in South Africa. And I ended up loving just the whole continent, or the part of it that I'd seen, the southern part, so much that my 3-week trip ended up being a multi-month trip. I ended up getting a job in a little Cuban bar in Cape Town. And
I think I went to that bar.
Really?
They had lots of like army stuff. Yeah. I totally forgot about that. That's incredible.
And Fidel Castro memorabilia. Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah, that's where I worked. Maybe I served you. Who knows?
I was there almost 20 years ago, but that's crazy.
Yeah, that is wild. Right on the main strip there. So I ended up sticking around for quite a few months until I think it was like Christmas Eve. I ended up flying home. My trip came to an end. It was a unique trip because I completed 2 years of university and then decided to take a year off. And that's when I did the trip. And so I kind of left this small, semi-small town in Canada, university town, surrounded by university students for 2 years, and then just went on this epic overland journey. And I was part of a group. So I think I was 19 at the time, but there were people in their 40s, 50s. There was like 3 guys in their 70s in our group. And it was just such a cool opportunity to connect with people from different countries and different ages on that level and spend, 3 weeks camping through Southern Africa with them. It was also my first adventure travel trip. So I think I'd traveled quite a bit with my parents growing up and had done a few trips with friends prior to that, but always kind of resort-based trips. And I went from like 0 to 100 with this one, just dove right in with a crazy overland camping expedition in Southern Africa. And it was just amazing.
You dove in, but there was still kind of that support with the group.
Exactly.
So at least you didn't have to worry too much, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I definitely wasn't going to take on Africa solo just yet.
Yeah, so true. So true.
What I think is really cool about where you went is just the diversity. You know, Mins was talking about just the variety and Kelsey kind of alluded to, you know, the variety. And even actually all of us have alluded to the variety. Even Mallory, you know, talked about the difference. But where you were, like the Okavango Delta versus Namibia versus Vic Falls versus Cape Town, like, it's all pretty close, relatively, and it's just so different, you know, not just what you're seeing, but the culture, the people. It's really interesting just, you know, to be able to combine all those great things in one trip. Must have just been so special.
It really was, yeah, and I think that was part of the charm of the whole experience, because I would see one epic thing. Well, starting with Vic Falls is pretty, you know, monumental in and of itself. And it's like, can it really get better from here? And then you just see the landscape change from the marshlands to the desert. And it's like, it just, every new landscape just shocked my socks off, quite literally. It was just like completely mind-blowing, and I couldn't wait for what was next, and everything just lived up to and far exceeded any expectations that I had. It was really cool.
That sounds like an epic trip, definitely. Another bucket list one for you, Richard, with your kids before they get too old.
I want to take them on safari so bad. My kids love animals, so like they're really fascinated by the natural world and like safaris. They want to go, and they want to see scorpions in the Amazon. We have a couple trips in the Amazon and they're just like amazed by that. So yeah, actually everyone talking here today is just giving me such wanderlust just to like, okay guys, we're going to stop for a month and just go scatter and do this. We can't right now.
You'll have to let your eldest listen to the podcast when it's done and then he can tell you how to prioritize all these trips.
Exactly, exactly.
So how about you, Sarah? What was your bucket list trip that you've done?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say it was pretty much the same. It was very, very hard to pick just one. And I'm super grateful to have had the opportunity to go back and look through all my photos. It was so amazing and definitely got the wanderlust going like crazy. And I texted my husband yesterday. I was like, I just need to go somewhere. So it's been amazing, but it's also been a bit of a challenge because now I just really want to travel. So about 6 years ago, I did South America with my best friend. We did it for, I think it was 6 to 7 weeks, and we did Paraguay first, which was a bit of a culture shock for us. We had already done Nepal when we were like fresh 18, and so we're totally fine with that. We just were not ready for like that full intro into like huge language barrier. Lonely Planet made it seem really, really scary there, and we were like very surprised to find out it wasn't at all. And but so like we'd get in the cab and we're like, oh, this one was unmarked, we're gonna die, we're like, this is not good. And it was the most surprising trip because everywhere we went it started so wrong and it ended so well, and we were just so shocked. So we got out of Paraguay really quick because it just wasn't vibing for us, and we went to Bolivia, we did Peru, we did Ecuador. And it was just absolutely incredible to do them all. Peru was by far my favorite, Ecuador second, and then just, you know, those amazing things in Bolivia that just made it so great. But overall, by far, Machu Picchu won everything.
So how did you work around that language barrier that you mentioned?
I actually was quite shy at the time. I've gotten better but my friend was quite good at just really like taking the steps and doing the things. And that's the biggest thing I've loved about traveling is it's really forced me to get out of my shell. I've made a lot of mistakes by being too shy and not asking for help. And I've ended up in really bad spots. So similar to Mallory, I'm sure you asked when you needed help, but I did not. really far away from where I was supposed to be. So yeah, I just really started to get more comfortable communicating and trusting that people around me were here to help and it wasn't this big, scary world.
You know, something interesting just about language. I was in Bolivia with my now wife and a friend of mine. We were trekking on Isla del Sol in Lake Titicaca. And we're walking and a man runs up and he like speaking very rapidly and, you know, gesturing. And my friend and my wife were like, he leaves and like, oh my God, is everything okay? What's going on? And I worked in Argentina, so I speak Spanish. I said, oh, he just said the town's like just over the hill. And you just realize when you don't speak the language and, you know, there's lots of, you know, it's an animated culture throughout South America. But a lot of times what we interpret as, oh, this is dangerous or this is worrying or, you know, I've got to be wary. It's people just being nice. We just don't know what they're saying. And I find that when I travel in places where I don't speak the language, I keep coming back. I'm like, hang on. Don't read too much into this. Maybe they're just like saying hi or saying the village is over the hill. But so I can sympathize with you because I've been there. And then I realize, hey, they're actually around the world, you know, people that travel, they always say humans are generally really nice. Like, you know, no matter where you are, they're helpful. They're kind to you as a stranger. There are exceptions, but we always don't think of that first. I want to ask about Ecuador because that's a place that I want to go to. What did you do in Ecuador? Because that's kind of on my bucket list now.
We spend a lot of time in kind of the rainforesty areas. We did Baños, and I don't know if any of you have heard like the swing at the end of the earth. Huge letdown. It is not at the end of the earth at all. It's like this, you're on the top of a hill, but it's this really, really gradual slope down. So you could just walk down it. So that was really interesting because we definitely went in with that expectation. And there's an angle that you can take your Instagram photo at where it looks like it's the edge of the earth. And everyone on your comments is like, oh my gosh. And you're like, it's not scary.
You are right about those Instagram photos. I have seen so many of those ones.
I am no longer as naive, but I used to be. But we did make friends with a local and he was like, come try this swing. And that one was like 5 feet away and it was wild. Like he straps you in and it literally feels like you're just going on a roller coaster. And so that was worth it at that point. So if you go, try and find that swing.
But you need inside help, Richard.
I'm worried if it's a swing on the end of the earth, I'm not letting my kids get on that. That sounds like something that they're, I'm taking them to the hospital after that. Alex joined us. You know, we started and Alex was busy. Alex, welcome to the podcast. Alex is one of the writers here at 10 Adventures. Why don't you tell us about your favorite trip and why?
Well, thanks for letting me join a few minutes late. I apologize for that. But similar to Nadine, I guess, my kind of favorite bucket list trip that I can remember kind of backed off of like my first experience traveling like on my own, not necessarily my own, my now wife, but my girlfriend at the time was with me, but without my parents. You know, everything before that had been, you know, family trips, whether it was, you know, resort-based stuff or, you know, going to visit family somewhere or just going, you know, on a vacation. But this was like my first experience of actually getting out and experiencing the world to travel on my own. And it was backpacking and caravanning through New Zealand. So we kind of moved over there just on a whim after we both graduated university and kind of toured the North and South Islands, bought a van in the process and used that to kind of get around and just experience the whole country as best as we could.
That's one trip that I'd love to do, although I haven't been there yet. So when you were traveling around in your van, what were you doing when you were stopping? Were you hiking? Were you on beaches? Were you biking? What were you up to?
I mean, we were kind of doing a little bit of everything. So when we were touring the North Island, we didn't actually have the van, and we were more so, it's called like woofing. It's working for accommodation. So we would kind of bounce around from hostel to hostel as we went through the different towns. But once we took the ferry over to the South Island and we spent about 2 months in Christchurch, we decided like, oh no, it's time to get the van and just like hit the road. So we kind of did a tour. We went down to Dunedin and then kind of went up the whole west coast of the island as well. But yeah, just kind of stopping off in all the towns, doing a bunch of hiking, you know, meeting a lot of people. There's a lot of really kind of weird areas where there's like a gray area of people camping out, but you know, it's not necessarily legal, but it's not illegal. And you meet a lot of really interesting people kind of like hanging out in those little beachside towns and stuff, but it's a great way to explore the country.
So I'm really interested in van life. I'm going to disclose, I watch a lot of van life YouTube videos. I have no idea why, but at some point I want to like build my own van. But what's it like living out of a van for, you know, an extended period of time? What are the pitfalls that people like me should be aware of? Because I know there are some, but I've never talked to anyone who's actually done it.
The biggest one is probably lack of privacy. Fortunate enough that I was already with my girlfriend. I think we were together for 5 months five years by that point already. So we were fairly, you know, comfortable with everything with each other, but for anybody, you know, just jumping into it, if you're sharing that small of a space with somebody, there's not much room to hide or anything, right? More so like the planning aspect of it is a tough thing. It seems like a really easy thing to do to just kind of hit the road and have that kind of carefree, no worries sort of lifestyle. But especially in New Zealand, I know that since we've come back, they've really started clamping down on a lot of like the laws of where you can actually stay overnight and the requirements on your vehicle. I know when we went, I was really pumped because I was actually going to buy a Subaru, and like, it was just like a little hatchback. And like, I'm 6'3". I am not fitting in a Subaru sleeping overnight. That's not going to happen. But when I went to buy it, the guy had actually sold it. So he sold us it's a 1992 Nissan Serena, which was a beautiful work van. It was great, but it was all emptied out in the back. We went to the thrift store and slid a mattress in. We did it pretty bare bones. So I guess you can get away with doing it on the very cheap if you need to, but maybe plan it out, make sure you have all the amenities you need, and definitely plan your route and where you're going to stop along the way. Make your life a lot easier.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned restrictions. I know here in Western Canada, they've really been clamping down on where you can park. And, you know, a lot of van dwellers, they aren't doing very much. They just park somewhere to sleep for the night, but it's getting harder and harder. And, you know, you see these YouTubers are like, they don't tell anyone where they're staying because they found a place or a place in the street that they can live. And yeah, it seems the biggest issue is always power and water. Is that the issue you guys dealt with as well down in New Zealand?
I mean, power wasn't necessarily the biggest issue because, I mean, we were halfway around the world from family and friends and stuff. We weren't really super concerned with staying in touch or anything like that. And we kind of had a small little gas stove burner thing. So for power, it wasn't really necessarily something we were kind of worried about. Water was definitely the big one. You know, you can only take brisk, refreshing swims in the ocean so many times before you start to really freeze. And we did it sort of on the edge of winter too, so it wasn't very nice. But yeah, just really finding places to park that you're allowed to. Slept a few nights in the equivalent of like a Walmart parking lot, which wasn't great just because you're trying not to get fined for sleeping somewhere else. So those are the big ones for sure.
Well, Richard, I never knew about this little secret obsession you had with van life YouTube videos.
Yeah, no, I just would love the freedom of, you know, being able to go around and park and not have to set up a tent or carry a trailer. We do everything tenty now, and it's fun. But I'm like, it'd be nice to have like, you know, one of those truck bed campers, or you know, have a van where you just can just show up and you know, or you can go onto Crown Land and just camp and not have to worry about setting everything up. So it's definitely not the answer with three little boys, because I don't know how.
Yeah, I was thinking like, I can't wait to see those photos of five of you inside the back of a van.
I don't think that would work, but no, when the kids are away, like my wife and I, we both have talked, like we're going to get a truck or a van and just kind of go and do a trip like what Minns has done and, you know, just explore this great continent.
Yeah, sounds good. So how about you, Richard? What's your favorite trip of all time?
Well, I said in a previous podcast, my favorite trip, the GR5, but truthfully, like anytime you travel, and I think even if it's just a short trip, but especially like a lot of the team here has talked about longer trips. When you just can kind of disconnect from the day-to-day and get into a different routine, I think that's just so important and so rewarding that, you know, not every day is a great day when you're doing something for 6 or 8 or 12 or 20 weeks, but just having that different focus in your life where it isn't all about got to do my emails, got to answer my phone, got to do my laundry, got to, you know, when you kind of disconnect from the day-to-day and just kind of live a different way, that I think is just super rewarding and something that's energizing. And whether that's going to Africa or Asia or South America, or even just staying here, I think anytime we can take a holiday and explore different cultures and foods, it's always good. Like, you know, usually the flights aren't good and usually like, you know, something goes wrong. But when you look back in hindsight, it's always like, man, that was a great trip. Even the ones that sucked in the moment, looking back even a week later, like, oh, that was actually really great. Yeah, we had food poisoning for 5 days, but you know, outside of that, the week was great.
I love looking at old photos for that reason. And it's true. A lot of things get better with time, for sure. It's kind of like a nice wine.
And what about you, Karen?
I was thinking about that before this podcast. And I was thinking, I've been to India 4 times. And I'd probably say that would be one of the definite highlights. And for me, it would probably be because it's just so different. And so I like the feeling of like really being challenged in what I think of the world. And, you know, so a very different culture. People there are super friendly. And so people were always coming up to you to talk to you. Now, sometimes it was because they wanted to sell you something or to rip you off. But a lot of the time, like they just want to chat, or they come up and they wanted to rip you off, but if you didn't want to get ripped off, you could just have a chat with them. And I really liked that. And I really liked being forced to challenge the way I thought of people and situations and the world. And it's a super colorful country, like literally colorful, and also colorful because of the, you know, vibrant personality, sights. So I'd say that would be a highlight.
Well, this has been great hearing everyone's favorite trips. And in fact, like there's a few of these I didn't know about. So it's kind of cool. I didn't realize Nadine spent 3 months in South Africa. I only knew a little bit about Alex's trip in New Zealand. I only knew a little bit about Minz's trip. I obviously knew Kelsey's time in Africa. But it was just so cool to hear all this. And so I hope everyone listening, you know, maybe there's a nugget in here that you start thinking about your next trip. You know, the pandemic's ending, and now's the time to start, you know, getting those bucket list trips, whether it's a 1 week trip or a 6 month trip. You know, there's no time like the present to go on a holiday. So thanks everyone for coming and sharing your dream trips with us.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.